Good afternoon and welcome to the Israel Project's conference call. 2.5 years, or if to be precise, 917 days after Operation Protective Edge was concluded, Israel's state comptroller has finally released the much-anticipated report on Israel's preparedness and decision-making process before and during the 2014 Gaza War. This report has had pretty much the entire political and security echelons in Israel on alert in recent weeks or months, and now that it has finally been released, lots of headlines and reactions are emerging, mainly on Israel's preparedness vis-a-vis the threat of Hamas's terror tunnels. With us on the line is military correspondent and defense analyst for Haaretz newspaper, Amos Harel. And Amos, you have had a week or so to go over the report before it was published. So with your help today, we're hoping to extrapolate the major findings of the report and its possible ramifications. So I suggest you start with an overview, and then we will turn to the many submitted questions. Amos?
Okay. Thank you, Dor. Just very briefly, the report has four parts. One of them has already been published regarding the home front a few months ago, didn't cause much of a stir. The two important parts which are released today, one has to do with the security cabinet's conduct during the war in Gaza in 2014, and the other has to do with the tunnel threat and how it was dealt with. The fourth part will be released sometime in the next few months, and this focuses mostly on the international law implications of the Israeli action in Gaza. There have already been quite a lot of political debates. We've seen a sort of a preemptive strike by the prime minister yesterday against the controller. Netanyahu said something like, I support the troops and the security apparatus while the controller doesn't. We've seen attacks by Yaelon, the former defense minister, as well. There are other people who may be heard by the conclusions, mostly Benny Gantz, the former chief of staff, who still has some political aspirations, and General Aviv Kochavi, who was at that time head of military intelligence and supposed to be appointed deputy chief of staff in a few months. Briefly, let's deal with the main conclusions. One, which has been all over the media in recent months, is the debate between Netanyahu and Bennett. And this has to do with what the security cabinet knew in advance regarding the tunnel threat. Netanyahu has maintained all through the summer that actually they were given all the relevant information, and that he showed quite a lot of quotes from different cabinet meetings in which this threat was dealt with. It turns out that the report completely accepts Bennett's point of view, which says that nothing of this sort happened and that whenever the tunnels were mentioned, it was part of a long list of potential security threats without the cabinet ministers having any kind of awareness about the reality and the immediacy of the threat. So the report here is entirely on Bennett's side. Another important issue has to do with the actual level of competence that the IDF has shown while dealing with the tunnels. And again, during the summer, Netanyahu claimed that it had fully operational plans were prepared, and they dealt with them as we expected. Again, the controller says not so. Actually, he more or less verifies the Haaretz report, which was published, I think, October 2014, immediately after the war, which says that the army, different army units did not really practice for this goal, for this mission, that there were not enough weapon systems to deal with the tunnel threat, that there was no military doctrine to deal with them. And if some of you may remember that Minister Yaelon at that time spoke of the possibility that the operation against the tunnels would take 3 days. Apparently, in the end, it took 3 weeks. And while there were 32 or 33, what we called at the time, offensive tunnels that were meant to be dug inside, underground, inside Israeli soil, it turns out that the actual achievement was not full. And the report says only half of these tunnels were fully destroyed, while others were only damaged, and that the damage has been repaired by Hamas since. Another important matter has to do with intelligence, mostly military intelligence and partly by Shin Bet. Again, quite harsh criticism by the controller. Not enough intelligence, not the priority in which the tunnel threat was put was not important enough. The Air Force did not have the information it needed regarding the tunnels, and you may remember there were quite a lot of Air Force strikes just before the war. Regarding that, they're also saying that both Shin Bet and Amman, the military intelligence, needed to present the full implications of the threat to the cabinet before the war. This is where I have to say I'm a bit doubtful about the conclusions. This is my own view, but I've heard this from other analysts as well. It seems that they're judging the military intelligence a bit too harshly, and that the expectations have been put slightly too high, because there's always a limit to what you know in advance. Another point I should make is that the whole story regarding the tunnels is, of course, important, and it's very much of an interest to the Israeli public, since this was the main threat and it was mostly discovered during the war, and since this is the battle, this is the place where most of the soldiers were killed. But in the end, it could be seen, at least partly, as a sort of a tactical issue or operational issue more than a strategic issue. And here, the report doesn't really focus so much on the events that led to the war and what was actually done to prevent the war. He does criticize the government, and especially Yaelon, Netanyahu, and Lieberman, for not handling any kind of strategic debate over Israel's strategic goals in Gaza in the security cabinet before the war, for not defining to the army what their actual goals should be in advance of the war, and for not looking up possible diplomatic alternatives to the war. There's also a quote there by Kogat, General Mordechai, 2 weeks before the war at a security cabinet, warning that the situation in Gaza is deteriorating and that the crisis regarding the infrastructure might affect the security issues as well. But I think the actual situation was even more difficult than is described at the report. We now assume, in retrospect, this is what most of the military analysts and intelligence experts inside the military are saying, that the war broke out because of a series of miscalculations on both sides. This was mutual. Israel suspected Hamas's intentions and vice versa, and neither side actually wanted to go to a war. But here's an issue where one might ask about the Israeli contribution to the war, and this is hardly mentioned, because many people believe now that Netanyahu was actually dragged into this by Hamas, that he didn't want a war. Having said that, it's doubtful whether he has taken all the necessary steps to prevent the war. This mostly has to do with the fact that Israel did not try to convince the Egyptians at that time to lift some of the siege in the Rafah crossing. And Yaelon himself, in the interviews he gave to the press in recent days, mentioned two other mistakes he saw. One had to do, if you remember, with the salaries crisis, the fact that there was an attempt by the UN and Qatar, with some kind of support by Israel, to transfer money to Hamas workers in Gaza, and this was prevented at the last moment by Lieberman and Netanyahu. And the second has to do, you may remember that in June, in mid-June, about the 3 weeks before the war broke, there was the case, of course, of the kidnapped Israeli teens in Gush Etzion, and then there was a decision to arrest more than 50 Hamas members who were released during the Shalit deal. And it's now believed by many people that this action by Israel has pushed Hamas into a corner. Finally, regarding the ramifications of the actual report, I think many people assume that this would lead to some kind of an improvement when it comes to procedure when Israel deals with such a security crisis. But I also assume that politically this would be quickly forgotten. We will see ministers blaming each other. We will see fights among generals regarding responsibility. But other than that, I think in the long run, this would be forgotten. The main problem I can see regarding that is that the whole story could be repeated in Gaza quite soon, because most of the parts in the equations remain. We still have a crisis with Gaza. The infrastructure problems remain. Hamas is probably even more hawkish towards Israel than it was before. And one final point I should remind you of is the fact that even now, 2.5 years later, although Israel has started initiating what we call a sort of a joint solution, both engineering, structural, and technological, regarding the identification and the prevention of tunnels along the border, it would take a very long time with a huge investment. We're talking about 2.5 billion shekels at least. And B, even the army's experts cannot say for sure whether this would work completely and whether this would actually prevent offensive tunnels from being dug towards Israeli soil.
All right, so this was a very thorough overview. With your permission, we'll try and dig a little bit deeper into each of the topics you've mentioned. Let's start with the IDF and what are the military lessons learned from Protective Edge, from the flaws regarding the tunnels, and how is the IDF has changed its operations since then?
I think the IDF is actually, it should not be praised for its actual conduct during the war, but I think that more than any other Israeli organization, it was willing to deal with the failure very quickly. Actually, much of what the report is saying relies on internal investigations and conclusions by the IDF, which were done by late 2014, early 2015. And if we look at the IDF's operations right now, for instance, the specific engineering unit that deals with tunnels has more than tripled its manpower since then. It's many different platforms and different weapon systems were bought. And I think that there's a new doctrine that has to deal with such a tunnel threat today. So there's been quite an improvement. So they've managed to do both. A, admit the actual problems that they face quite quickly, and B, deal with not a full-scale solution to tunnel problems, but they're much more equipped to face that challenge than they were in July 2014.
So you mentioned the existing tunnels that did not suffer enough damage, according to the report. What do we know today about the tunnel threat from Gaza? How many tunnels are crossing into Israel, and what are Hamas's capabilities, according to...
Look, they're not releasing the full information, and I'm not sure they have the full intelligence over this, and we're quite sure that they don't know the exact whereabouts of these tunnels, because in three cases where they did, Israel has acted to destroy the tunnels since 2014, since the war. Other than that, there have been various assumptions. It's believed that somewhere between 10 to 20 offensive tunnels exist, and that many, if not most, of these tunnels were actually dug underground inside Israeli territory with an exit point inside Israel. They're still looking for these tunnels. They haven't discovered them yet. Regarding Hamas's capabilities, it's now, after we've had a look at some of these tunnels during the war and after it, it's now believed that Hamas is fully capable of initiating an attack through such a tunnel and sending, for instance, a few dozens of armed fighters inside a tunnel underneath the Israeli border and initiating some kind of a surprise attack, either on a kibbutz on the border or a military outpost, something like that. I think that the Hamas's best-case scenario would be a simultaneous attack in four or five places at the same time, something that they could not do at 2014, but they hope to be capable of doing sometime in the future. On the other hand, Israel hopes to have some kind of a hint about that kind of a plan being initiated in the future, and to have the possibility to rearrange its forces accordingly before this happens. But this remains a quite imminent danger, and it can happen. And I think one of the lessons that Hamas has learned from 2014 is that this military secrets should be kept to a small number of operational commanders, and not political branch of Hamas could not be involved in such a decision. So Hamas would make a point of preventing such information from leaking, because if you look back at 2014, it's rather clear that the Israelis were up to Hamas's intentions, and that Israel had at least some idea of Hamas's plan. If you remember at that time, July 6th, July 7th, 2014, Hamas tried to initiate, was at least preparing to start an attack through a tunnel at the Kerem Shalom area, the southernmost point of the Gaza Strip.
Do you anticipate an escalation on the border in the near future? We've seen several rocket attacks from Gaza towards Israel.
Look, it's always complicated to assess anything like that, and we've seen both the press and military intelligence failing miserably when it came to such assumptions. Having said that, I think the Sinwar being elected as the head of Hamas in Gaza is not a good sign. He's rather hawkish, and he's leading the military, not only the military wing, but he's also calling the shots when it comes to politics at this moment. On the other hand, we've seen this new romance between Egypt and Hamas, and this would hopefully help to contain Hamas for the time being. Possibilities for escalation, I can see two of these. One, a Hamas decision for a so-called breakout in order to avoid either the growing crisis regarding infrastructure, civilian infrastructure, electricity, sewage, water, and so on, or in order to force Israel into a release of more prisoners, something that's very close to Sinwar's heart. The second possibility is that the Salafi groups may ignite something by shooting rockets. While Hamas doesn't want them to do that, it happens every now and then. And if a Salafi group is some way successful at killing Israeli civilians on the Israeli side of the border by launching rockets, if they happen to succeed in that, then there will be quite a lot of pressure on Lieberman and Netanyahu to deliver on their promises to hit Hamas badly. And at least Lieberman is entertaining the idea that that kind of action, military, massive military action, can serve him politically in the future inside Israel's political map. I think Netanyahu, as a matter of habit and character, would rather avoid unnecessary escalations. He's very much aware of the possibility of things going wrong. Lieberman is another matter. The fact that he's shown himself as relatively responsible in recent months and so on doesn't mean that he does not still think of this idea of changing a regime in Hamas and hoping that this would help him politically as well.
So you've already opened the door for the political questions, and lots of them were submitted. I'll try to bundle them together. But do you anticipate there will be any political ramifications, positive or negative, for the key players, you know, Netanyahu, Bennett, Lapid, Yaron,
okay,
Gantz?
How
will Netanyahu be able, or is he able, to isolate himself from the criticism of failure in that operation?
Okay, so let's start with the end. Netanyahu is already been doing this while exclaiming support for the troops and so on. He's been hinting, and some of his people have been hinting, that it was actually the general's fault and not his own, and that he, as usual, was successful in his performance during the Gaza operation in 2014. And as I said, there was already a preemptive strike against the comptroller report, and considering the current political atmosphere in Israel, he's been quite successful in that. We've seen similar attacks on the press, on the Israeli left, and so on. I assume that most of his followers would buy that kind of an argument and would not hold the conclusions too much against him. And as I said, quite a lot has happened since the war. I don't think it's an urgent matter to most Israelis. Perhaps it should be, but that's not the case. When it comes to Yaelon and Gantz, they have much to lose. Yaelon is already a political actor. Gantz has been considering a political future for ages. I think both of them will be hurt badly by the report, and there will always be the shadow of this report regarding Gaza if Gantz decides to jump into politics again, or when Yaelon makes a political comeback against Netanyahu. And we have to remember that they're on the same side when it comes to the Gaza operation. This is the only thing they agree on. They're defending themselves against wide accusations. Lieberman is out of the equation. He hasn't been mentioned too much in the report. He was a foreign minister at that time. He was not crucial to events. And when it comes to Bennett, he's going to use this. We've already seen leaks for months and months that praise Bennett for his attitude, for his behavior, for his instincts, and so on. And he's going to use that. We're going to see many, many of these quotes in the near future in order to prove to the right-wing voters that he's much of a contender for being a prime minister, and that he actually has better instincts regarding security than people like Lieberman or Yellen or Netanyahu. I'm not sure how helpful this would actually be, but he's going to play it as much as he can, because, again, the report actually praises him, and he did show better instincts than most of his colleagues. Regarding the left, they'll try what they can. Lapid will try to make people forget that he was part of this coalition to begin with. We've already seen Ofer Shelach attacking Netanyahu for his conduct. Hilton would do the same. I'm not sure how many of these allegations would actually stick. And as I said, I suspect that this would not become a long-term political issue for Israelis.
All right, so one last question with your permission before we let you go, and thank you again for taking the time to brief us so thoroughly. On the international law side, what does this report mean, and what should we expect in the report that should be published in the next few days?
Mm-hmm. 1 second, I'm in the Tel Aviv Center, and there's a plane above me. Okay, I hope you can hear me.
Yes.
Look, we still don't know. It should be published in a few months' time, and it's supposed to address most of the accusations against Israel, you know, bolts on two, if you'd like, the accusations regarding 2014 and so on. I think there will be some criticism there, but there will be an effort on the controller's side to show that he's helping actually the Israeli case, and that he's proving that Israel did have justification for much of its actions fighting Hamas, when Hamas was hiding behind civilian population and so on. I don't think that this would cause much of a stir domestically. When that part of the report is finally published, there will be international interest, of course, and so on. But then again, so many years and months after the actual event, and since so much has happened in the Middle East, so much worse things have happened in the Middle East since, I don't think it will cause a lot of attention either domestically or even internationally on a major level when this is finally released.
All right. Amos Harel, military correspondent and defense analyst for Haaretz newspaper. Thank you, as always, for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you.